Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August 8th, 2002. Today's session is titled, Building Bridges, Ministering to the Hispanic Community, Strategies for Evangelization and Ministry Among the Hispanics, presented by Luz Maria Cabrera. The tape number is CAL 2002-04. Let's listen in.
Strategies for starting new ministries. And those new ministries are with the Hispanic. We have in place, we have in place in the Lutheran Church that we can call four models of Hispanic ministries. I'm going to write down here the four models that we have now in the Lutheran Church. Later, I'm going to start explaining each one of these models. The first one is Hispanic Mission, which is one founded and supported by TO, Division for Irish. You know that Division for Irish is one of the divisions that the church has that is devoted to open new ministries. These churches, these ministries, are funded and opened by the Division for Irish. Those are by the Hispanic Mission is just alone by itself. These missions are not related to other churches. Mm-hmm. I'm going to explain in details later this one. The other model that we have is a shared ministry. There are two churches or two ministries sharing one building. This one is an English congregation, and then the Hispanic congregation, they are sharing one building, but they have two different councils. Each one have their own pastor, their own governance, everything. They are just sharing the buildings. The other one is a bilingual ministry. There are some congregations that are sharing everything. They are sharing everything, the pastor, the building, the same service happened, that service is bilingual. The other model is a bilingual pastor. We have model when the pastor is bilingual, they have two congregations. They are sharing just the pastor.
How is that one different than the one before?
This bilingual, the service is it's a bilingual service.
So it's two
service.
Pastors, one speaking English, one speaking Spanish?
No, usually it's one pastor.
Okay, and then
this is a bilingual pastor where are two different congregations. They are sharing just the pastor.
Oh, I understand, okay.
Here are sharing everything, the building, the pastor, and the service is the same.
Okay.
Here are two separate congregations.
Right.
They are sharing just the pastor. Let me try all the tales. I'm going to explain which each one of these experience. And I cannot say that one is better than the other. It depends on the circumstances and the place and the pastors and the congregation, etc. And this Hispanic Mission, where the Hispanics have their own building, their own pastor, everything is just for them, are those that grow faster than the others. They are funded by Division for Outreach, they are paying the pastor, etc. They grow really fast. I mean, in a couple of years, they are passing the hundreds and people, and in a few years they are reaching 200, 300 people. But happened that if you know the policies of Division for Outreach, but after 5 years, those ministries are supposed to be self-support. And it happens that these ministries, they are not able to support themselves for a lot of circumstances. The people there, they have to support the pastor and all the benefits of the pastor, and also the building, the utilities, and that's too much for, if you think that you are dealing with the poor people, the poorest in this country. And another thing is that this ministry is really a burning ministry for the pastor. We were in one of these ministries the first time. And as you think, for example, those that you that are pastor, that you are going to start a new congregation from the scratch. But you are going to start with people coming from a different Christian background, where they have not been training to help in the church. They are not been also having before a Sunday school, groups of women, men, youth. And then you have to start from really having no help from the congregation, from the, you had first to train them. Instead of you start seeing that the people are coming, then you have to divide those in groups and start organizing the council and start training the people to help you. And then you have to rely on your closest family, your wife, your children to help you, because you have no secretary at this time. Nobody else to help you. And then the first thing is really the pastor get involved like in a spinning all day, because he has to do the services, to have the classes with the kids, with the teenagers, training the lay leaders, visiting, sending letters, doing reports. It's really a hard experience. That's why there are not too many pastors that want to be mission developers. Yeah. Because it's an important experience, even more for the Hispanics, that they had to train the lay leaders all the time, start training the people, and also seeing that even that we are doing always the stewardship training, not feeling they are not enough, because there are two circumstances here, because the people are coming from them. Catholic tradition, where they have no a tradition to support their ministries, because you know that the Catholic priests, they do a vow of poverty. They are not getting a salary. And another thing is they call the offering in the Catholic Church, they don't call offering, not in Spanish. They call it alms, limosna. What we usually offer, like a limosna, is what the little coins that you have in your pocket, but to give them like an alms. And that's why to start training and changing that mentality is something that takes years. And we have the pressure of start being self-support in a couple of years. Anyhow, but one of the problems that we face as a Catholic, as a Hispanic ministries, is that when we are in a small group, seems that everything is okay. When we are 30 or 40 people in our congregation, everybody, oh, look at the Hispanic, oh, look how cute they are. But as soon as we start growing up, there's the problem. They start also growing. For example, I'm going to give you an example. When we were in Houston, that we have the congregation, the small group that we began from scratch, and then we were in 30, 40 people. We have some Lutheran congregations, Anglo congregation that were around us, supporting us with money and so. But as soon as we reached the 100 members, then the problem began, because the two closest Anglo congregations, they wanted to that we move to their buildings as a way that they can have more membership. Mm-hmm. Then began a struggle between the two congregations, mm-hmm. the two Anglo. They weren't big and strong. And we were handcuffed in middle. Yes, our congregation following, growing up, the fight was bigger until we reached the point that we were not able to stay with our congregation because the church that had at the moment more power pulled the congregation too, into the congregation. Even that we told them, you are going to destroy the congregation. Mm. Believe that this congregation belongs to this neighborhood. Because you are moving this congregation into a white neighborhood, then the people will leave the congregation. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening at the end. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, and also it's difficult to have one independent ministry, but the circumstances first, that the congregations, they don't feel relate to the Lutheran Church, even that we all the time identify ourselves as Lutheran, even because you need to have the gatherings, the with other Lutheran churches, you need to have events together that they can feel related. Mm-hmm. If we are just by yourself, there are just one Hispanic congregation in the area with no relationship with other Lutheran congregation. That is so difficult for the congregation to feel related. They are having that feeling of belonging to our denomination. They thought all the time that the name of our congregation was Lutheran. Even that the name of our congregation was Hope, Esperanza. They say, they thought that it was the name of the congregation, of the mission. Uh-huh. It was not a denomination because it is difficult. And also it's difficult to do the passage from being a Hispanic congregation into a bilingual and later to an English-speaking congregation. Doing that passage is more difficult because you are not related to an English congregation. Even so, as I was telling, these churches grow faster than the other because they have their own governance, their own independence, and they do well. Here, two churches. This is the most complicated, but also, from my point of view, is the most productive. And these two churches, they are two congregations, an English-speaking congregation and a Hispanic sharing a building. And they are, they have their own pastor, their own governance, their own financial support, etc. They are just sharing the building. And our first experience having this, there is one in California, and close to the border, it was catastrophic, the first one. Because when we began this ministry, it was together with the episcopals. The priest, the first one, was in a person that was opening and he welcoming us, and then we began this ministry pretty well. It started growing and etc. But it happened that after 6 months that we were there, his wife passed away, and he also died 4 months later. And then the new priest that came in was really close. He said, I don't want nothing to do with the Lutherans, I don't want nothing to do with Hispanics, and they were fighting between in the congregations because that. Mm-hmm. Even that the bishops, they weren't they're intervening, in trying to help, was impossible. When this priest said no, the congregation followed him, it was really. And we had to leave that building. You go with the Missouri Synod, where the church that they opened the facilities, you were with them, and it was perfect. Mm-hmm. Until now, the congregation is there. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was in Sacramento, when an English-speaking congregation invited us to open a new ministry. The new ministry was supported by DO, but we were sharing the building. Yeah. And for our experience was really rewarding, this experience. First, we had the support of the congregation in the teaching. We had with them together the Sunday school. And as they have the teachers there, they have the training, the we sharing everything, the building there, then having the Sunday school with them and the youth group together, it was easier for us to devote our time for other things like evangelization, reaching out, because we have that situation. And it's not easy to have them together, but with the willing, first of all, of the pastors to work together. They were solving the problems. And later, and when the relationship was growing up, that our congregation was also helping with the cleaning of the church, with paying the bills, and that was making our relationship stronger. Up to the point that my husband later was also helping the English congregation, visiting or preaching when the pastor was out, the relationship was. And it was like a pushing effect for that congregation, because as we had to do outreach, visiting the neighborhood, inviting them, the Anglo said, why we don't do the same? And they start also having outreach committee, start visiting. It was like we were helping and pushing each other to it was a really a good, it was a good experience in this community. But we weren't every day waving to build that relationship with them, because it's not easy to put together. But with the willing of those two pastors to do it, it was possible. Because every time that a problem arose, the pastor was there to say, no, we can't save this, we can't do this. And because we recognize that our first problem is also our first treasure. Mm-hmm. These are the children. Mm-hmm. We're bringing children to the churches where they are not used to have children. They need more. For example, in our field experience that I was telling with the Episcopals, one of the complaints that Episcopals have to their bishop say, well, because those Hispanics, they are bringing a lot of children. And the bishop told them, I told you that they will bring children. And you say, that's great, we need children here. Yes, a lady said, but we mean 7 or 8, not 40. That's in a situation where the churches, they are no longer used to have. There are no group that is doing the caution between those two. There is no young people that are doing that caution between those two groups. That is when the problems start. Because we gather a lot, 40, 50 kids is at the average day. One day the bishop, our former bishop was telling us, I visited an Hispanic congregation, each one of the children brought me a flower. When I get back home, I was counting the flowers, they were 75 flowers. Mm-hmm. Wow. And in our relationship with the English congregation, that's our treasure, but also mm-hmm. our problem is because also the English-speaking congregation, they are no longer using to have in place programs for youth or kids, or they are having problems. It's not for this. We need a person hired just for work with youth and children.
So is that what you did then? Did you hire somebody?
Well, we didn't have not even money to pay the pastor. What we did is that in that second congregation, we relayed in the English-speaking congregation that they have a lot of retired teachers and Sunday school teachers to helping us with the kids.
So that church is still going?
It's still going. Mm-hmm. and there is still
but
growing.
But they can do it in English.
Yeah, the children, they can do it in English, that one. Uh-huh.
Like it, in
right.
Our ministry, where they, many of them speak only Spanish, so mm-hmm. like we, that's the, where the difficulty comes in, right?
Right, but the adults, they are the ones that speak just Spanish. The children, they speak English.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, the but we didn't leave the teachers alone. They were always was somebody from our congregation mm-hmm. helping, because those children, you know, they are smart. As soon as they realize that the teacher doesn't speak Spanish, they switched into Spanish. They began speaking Spanish among them. And that's why you always have a person from our congregation helping them. We especially with the discipline, because you know they are switching to Spanish. In this bilingual ministry, there are some examples they have that I know. There are some in Texas. There are also one here in Washington, close to our ministry. There are bilingual. They have this bilingual ministry because different circumstances. They cannot have an Hispanic pastor, and they don't. The decision is not to split the congregations, having just one. But also, for example, Texas, I saw one ministry that is bilingual, is because the majority of the members, at some point, they were Hispanics. They began marrying Anglo people. And then they start coming into the church, they decide to have a bilingual service instead of Spanish. That way a husband or wife could be involved also in the ministry. And also I know other one in Chicago where the pastor, she decided to have this bilingual service because that way she can get involved the young people in the service, because there were a lot of gang members around her church, and she began inviting them, but they were, even though they were in Spanish, they were not really good at speaking Spanish, and she switched into a bilingual service. Mm-hmm. The pastor is bilingual, it is just one service. And this other model where the bilingual pastor, there is the most, almost all these are Anglo pastors. They have even been in Latin America as missionaries. So they come back and they decide to have a Hispanic ministry. And they are, when they have been hired, they always ask to their congregation, "Okay, I want to be also a Hispanic, having a Hispanic ministry." They go with that condition into those churches. They are mostly located in Texas or California, where the pastors are bilingual, and their main congregation is the Anglo, but they also do an outreach with Hispanic. Those are the models that we have in place in the ELCA. Mm-hmm. Which one is better? I cannot say that is better than the other. That's, as I tell you, that is part of depend on the circumstances, because sometimes this here, that they are growing up together, sometimes it is reached the point when they met at a certain point, they having just one council. Later with the year, they decide to have just one council, just one governance, to go together. And also here, when they start this ministry belong to this local church, and then there are also at some point coming together. But how do we start this Hispanic ministries? That's the how you are going to, if you as a congregation decide to outreach the Hispanic, or you have been hired just to open a Hispanic ministry. First of all, you have to start doing a diagnostic of your situation. Where I am in this point. And that diagnostic, you have to have in mind the If you are a pastor or you are a member of a congregation that you want to have an Hispanic ministry, you will never will have the 100% of support of your congregation. You will not die because there are people that never, they really don't want nothing changed in their in their building, that nobody moved, nothing. They don't want to hear guitars or tambourines at their services, or they don't want nothing changed. That's, but at least you have to have a committee that is going to support that mission. Therefore, that's evangelism, evangelization. Because something that we have lost, or we don't have the vision, it is not to reach out the Hispanic. That is that we are going to do mission. That we are going to get involved in evangelism. That's something that we are going to create, not the Hispanic committee, but the mission committee. And you have to start with this diagnostic. And with this diagnostic, you have to think, what do we have in place? We have that committee? Yes, if not, we have to create. We have also to start working into your congregation. The first step is, you are not going to start to begin reaching out the Hispanics first. You have to start with your own congregation, with the willingness to do mission. Because even so, I have been seeing congregations, they are close even to reach out to Anglo people. They are being so comfortable, being all together, they know each other. One time I visited a congregation, and they gave me one of those tags that the people hang here. They said, I was invited to speak there in the evening. Because everybody have their own, they're hanging there in the place. And I asked the pastor, the people are new here? No, they have been here for 4 years together. Well, why do they have those name tags if they know each other for 4 years? I mean, well, it's a tradition. It's a tradition to hand those tags because nobody else is coming out of this small group. There were like 30 people. And that's something that it doesn't fit in my mind. Why do you need those name tags? But that's not giving you the picture of that congregation that they are having 30 or 40 people for years and years and years. Nobody else came. They weren't so close, even to the white people. Can you imagine to the Hispanics or well, let me tell you that what is important also to start doing training and mission. That is the first thing. Training and mission your congregation. There is a congregation there in California. It was in the process of dying, that congregation. The ladies, they have their Bible studies every week. I think so was Wednesday that the ladies meet, and they have their group of 20 ladies that day. But when they, two of them, those two ladies, they went to a training. That's that they, sometimes the scene of the training, those two ladies went to a training on mission. And they came back with new ideas, which they got fired. And they start growing up that small group of women. They began inviting others, they were so happy, more training and more people. So then in a year, this group of ladies, they were from 20 to 80. Oh. Those other new one, they began inviting their family to the services. This church began moving up again. That's with a renew. It was the moment to start also an Hispanic ministry. When they invite me to talk to that congregation, and the diagnostic, I told them that people, this is the moment you can start. Because it's the moment when you got fired to do mission. And that way you can start inviting new people and start also to have in place this ministry. That's what you have to start doing, your own diagnostic. Where I am, if I am able right now to start doing mission, or we have to start first with our own congregation. Never move out your congregation to do Hispanic ministry. They are not ready to. Like when that experience that I told you with the pastor and the congregation, we came together pretty well. That was an effort that the pastor and another Hispanic leaders worked with those congregation for 4 years before that congregation went away. The second thing is, when you do your diagnostic, you have to start training leaders to work with a different group, to start understanding the culture, to start understanding what is going on. And also, you have to have in place, when they start reaching out the Hispanics, is what we call social and prophetic ministry. That is always will come to your ministry. Having in place this social and prophetic ministry that we call happens that we always have been seeing that as the church or the mission will be the center of the life of the Hispanics. First of all, because it's a place that they can trust. There are people that they can trust. And also, they don't have any other place to gather. There, for example, they live in there in the community, they cannot speak with their neighbors because of the language. And that at work, they don't trust if that person is going there. Maybe if he or she knows that I have no papers, they are going to tell the others, to tell the boss, and they cannot trust. But in church, they can trust each other. And that way, our services last 2 hours. After the service, the people are always asking the pastor, you know, pastor, next week is my daughter's birthday. Can I bring a cake to share with the children? Sure, bring a cake. And then the people start remaining after the service to share the cake. The next week, somebody else is having birthday, you bring in food, and so on. And then the service lasts 2 hours, the people stay 2 or 3 more hours there. Sharing, and then later they start asking each other, do you know where is the job right now? Well, they can tell you that somebody can start building that community. It is time when we start building all this relationship that we left behind. We are building all that relationship around the church. And also, the people start asking the pastor, pastor, I got this letter, I don't know what it says. I don't read English, and I don't trust all to somebody else to read this letter. All the letters say that it is. That your children or your kid is having problems in the school today. Oh, can you please come with me to meet the teacher? And then suddenly the pastor start getting involved in the problems and the situation that the people is facing. Because he or she is a person that they can trust. I have this problem with my boss. Could you please come over and speak, talk with him or she about me? Could you please explain my boss that I missed that day because I was sick, but I don't have any doctor report because I didn't went with the doctor. You know that some Hispanic stores, they sell a lot of medicines coming from Mexico. They use under the counter, you go and buy medicine. And the people, they have to, they self-medicate because they go into the store and buy medicine. Well, I don't have any doctor report because I took my pills. That way, this is social ministry start growing around this mission. Sooner or later, this social ministry is going to start. if the people is, they are not coming asking you. Sometimes the first thought in the English-speaking congregation is, why wouldn't we open a food pantry? When we were in Houston, some brothers and sisters, I know that are in good faith, that they began bringing food and bread and candy. We didn't know what to do because the people that were not accepted, no, we have enough, and no, we don't need it. Right? Yes, we weren't taken to the to the other places because the people, they are not coming to the church looking for that kind of support. They need other support, all that they need your spiritual and also psychological support. Somebody that can sit and tell all their problems as they usually do with the pastor, but also there is God beyond, because it's all the time, all the congregation, all of them asking for this kind of support.
What about these congregations that just, like you say, they're kind of this closed little club that never grows? Is there hope for them to actually start some kind of a ministry? If maybe there's a few members that have the desire, they say they want to do it, but you say that they need to be ready to do that, because they need to be able to do, just understand ministry in their own congregation, right? Because they're not even growing themselves. Mm-hmm. What is the hope for the congregation?
Well, what DO, which is Division for Outreach, is doing right now is some synods are doing also. They are closing those small congregation, giving the building to Hispanic ministry. Because when they are this small group and there are coming new people, they immediately take control of everything. There are few people, but they have been controlling everything. They don't give any, giving us a key to enter into the church. They had to call them and say, oh, we are going to have a meeting here, and they are coming to open the door.
Right.
They lock everything because they don't want to lose the control. And that is impossible even for them to grow if they don't let grow their other ministry.
Right. So that's the experience you had when they were like measuring the sugar and all that?
Right. Because that was a group there when we worked that the lady that they always were complaining to the bishop that we never left the sugar pot in the same place. We always have the sugar pot in this place, and they are always leaving the door. Well, then the bishop called on me, please buy another sugar. Have your own sugar, I am tired.
Bishop, huh?
Why, if I live in a small community, why would Hispanic people come to my Lutheran church when there's a Spanish-speaking pastor at the Catholic church, there's a Pentecostal Spanish-speaking church in a few miles away? Why would I start a Hispanic ministry as a Lutheran in that context? Are there people that...
Mm-hmm. Well, let me explain. When we start here in the United States and the Hispanic ministry, we always start with the kids. Mm-hmm. Because they are a lot. And also because as we are Lutheran, we offer some tradition that are also in the Catholic tradition, mm-hmm. as their catechism classes. Mm-hmm. There is something that when we start, we always start offering catechism classes. And that the parents start sending their children, because sometimes the parents, they are not married into the Catholic Church. And you know that the Catholic Church has a lot of rules regarding this issue. If the parents are not married into the Catholic Church, they are not even baptized in the kids, or they are not accepted to become going to confirmation. And then we are coming like alternative for that. We baptize kids. There's something that they don't, the Pentecostals, they they don't do, mm-hmm. or all other denominations like Baptist, and then we do baptize mm-hmm. children in the summer. And also we have the catechism, and one day, when opportunity in one of our congregation, in one year, we have like 25 first communion. When we, as they were in too many, we divided in three groups to have those first communion, because in the Mexican and our Central or Latino tradition is a really huge moment in our lives to have the first communion. All the girls, they are wearing a white, like a little bright with a veil and the how do you get the corona?
The crown,
right? And all the boys go with their suit and tie, and then after that they are having a big party at home. The grandparents are coming from Mexico, wherever, because it's a really good thing. We couldn't have all those people the same day, the 25, then we broke that. And it's a big moment of evangelization. Mm-hmm. But that is why these people are coming, the Hispanic, because they want to, the kids be teach into the Christian tradition. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so one of the Lutheran strong suits, for example, is also one of the very things that would play into the need of the community for folks who are not connected to the
to
the Roman Catholic Church.
Right. They don't know. Mm-hmm. They are being accepted.
You already mentioned about the marriage problem, right?
So they are. They have a lot of couples that are not married among Hispanic, because, you know, having a wedding is a big expense. Mm-hmm. They are living together for years and years. Mm-hmm. And they are not having the communion into the Catholic Church because they are not married.
Okay.
That's right. Another. The sacraments is another element that is bringing the people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Our congregation I serve in La Center, Washington, is kind of in your second model, shared facilities. I mentioned earlier over a meal yesterday, I think it was. We have a group, there's a lot of Hispanic people more and more in Clark County. We live in a pretty rural area, but there are a lot of families who work in the fields and the berry fields and who are now staying year round and so on. And this group from Vancouver, a pastor and his family started worshiping with us at Easter, and then out of that conversation arose in which they requested to, could we share space to begin our own outreach ministry to the Spanish-speaking community. So this didn't come from the Lutheran Church. This came from a group, and they're connected to their mother church or denomination is based in Mexico City. Well, I really don't know much at all about the ministry, or you know, through our conversations, they've indicated that you know, they said, you know, after worshiping with us a couple of months, that we're in agreement with what we're, you know, on the basics of Christian faith, and although they've chosen not to participate in communion. And I said, you know that you are welcome to the table. I said, well, we in our churches, we only commune, you know, a couple times a year, and the way you are. And I said, well, that's fine, you know, but know that you're always invited to participate. And so our congregation at the spring congregational meeting, we have three meetings a year, and at the in June, this was a proposal, you know, to be able to open our facilities to share. And at first, that meant just using a room, but we know that it might mean using more facilities in the future. And there was a unanimous vote. You know, people were, and I was really happy with that in our congregation. But we're trying to figure out what this means exactly, and what that relationship is going to be. Some of our people said, "Wow, maybe we could do some joint services, every once in a while," and which would be wonderful. And at the same time, not knowing much about the background of this denomination or what, doctrinally or another, what their belief system is, it's challenging. And I do not, currently, I do not speak Spanish. And so there's it's an interesting journey that we've just started. And I'm not sure where it's going to lead, but we're kind of in that second model of shared facilities, but with the twist that, this is not a Lutheran identity that's coming in, but a different kind of identity, and I'm not sure exactly what, other than saying that it's clearly Christian. So I'm looking for ways of, supporting that relationship without being overbearing. Do you have any words of wisdom for us?
Well, did you say that the mother church is in Mexico? I have an idea which churches, if they are born in Mexico, I know what churches, I'm not for sure. But let me give you an advance from, that is from tomorrow, right? That is gonna ask, I am Hispanic, but I am so I'm a Lutheran. And that is strong in me, that when we having, when we are opening this our ministries to a group, a different group, we are something that we can negotiate. Okay, we are going to negotiate. Maybe you can hang here a carpet or whatever, having music. Okay, you can play the guitar, the tambourine, the marimba, whatever, harpa. We can negotiate some, we can negotiate a lot of liturgies. But what we never ever negotiate with you is our core values, our theology, our values. That is something that we don't negotiate. If you are going to be Lutherans, you are going to be Lutherans. We don't. We won't change our core values for accepting new rules. That's something that I always recommend, because we have to make changes, a lot of changes, if you want to open your ministry. As I told you the first day, our identity is an a Lutheran identity, not an ethnic identity. I won't become more,
right.
I won't accept to be in a church. They are singing me the German songs for ever and ever. I need to hear the mariachis and the salsa music in my services. I need to, the pastor wear different clothes. I need the people, the children, maybe they are more noisy in our services than in yours, etc. The liturgical things we can negotiate. But the sacraments, we cannot. All our theological, we don't know, even for having tons of Hispanics in our community.
I was going to ask the pastor there, have you gone to one of their services?
Currently, their service is primarily just a teaching. They just actually started here about a month ago. They said at first it'll probably just be
you know, our family, extended family, and some other people. It'll be in Spanish. I mean, the pastor, his 16-year-old daughter has been the translator for us in doing all this. Although he does speak English to some degree. So, you know, my concern has been not that our congregation not try to kind of swoop in and try to do too much, but allow them space to, you know, to create, right, you know, what they need to create. And then, you know, to be willing and ready to look for opportunities to do things together as they develop, but not to to kind of hover.
Well, that was in the past, I've been experiencing like that with the Anglo congregation. They rented or given a space to different, mostly of them are Pentecostal. Mm-hmm. And that is happening when these Pentecostals are getting acquainted with the pastors, and then, you know, that sometimes their churches, they born from, they split for another congregation. And then their doctrine, they don't have a really strong doctrine. And then when they start the relationship with the pastor, among the pastors, and they start hearing the Lutheran pastor and all his doctrine and the strong beliefs and theology. That is when I told you yesterday, when our congregation, they didn't turn into Lutheran with pastoring. Well, the pastor is the one that become Lutheran, and then all the congregation following the pastor. But it is not the main goal that we have when we invite them to come or to rent an estate. But with the year that has been happening, that some congregations have become Lutherans, because the doctrine that they have. Sometimes they don't have any, just they don't split from another congregation.
Yeah.
This happened too many times with the Pentecostal. They don't agree, one person just walk away. With,
yeah,
20 or 40 people, that they ask some church to rent a space and start with their ministry.
Yeah.
If they don't have any training, they start, when they start getting involved in what they. That's why we have, as I told you yesterday, a lot of former Pentecostal pastors among our pastors.
Oh, interesting.
Because of that situation.
Oh.
Well, and that's when they follow with your diagnostic, you are going to conjure resources. What resources do you have in place? You have teachers, you have people that is bilingual, and that you are, because let me tell you that in the Lutheran Church, we don't have too many resources for Hispanics. We are creating right now. Just 2 years ago, we had the new hymnary, the Spanish hymnary. There is not a translation from the hymnary that you have, because before that, we had just a translation. Now we have a new one that it was created just for Hispanic. The songs are coming from Latin America, and we have new liturgies that we didn't have before, like the quinceañera.
Mm.
That is really important when the girls reach the 15 years old. Mm-hmm. That is really important. And also the blessing of the houses.
But they have to be virgins too.
Right.
You can't turn 15. You can't be have a quinceañera if you're not a virgin.
Right. So you have a big part.
You have to be a virgin
again. Right, it's a big celebration of 15 years. And also the blessing of the houses is another important thing. And the other one are the posadas. It's another.
And those are all in that new hymnal?
And those are on the new hymnal.
Can you say any more about either any of those? That's great.
Well, that's the new hymnal. Even my husband was in that committee of the new hymnal. First, different with the old one is that all the songs weren't gathering from Latin America or the Caribbean. They brought some that weren't created here, but by the Hispanic. We have just few that weren't translated from English, those that are the more the traditional, like Castillo Fuerte, right, Amazing Grace, those are the ones, but the others are with salsa or mariachi or tango. And then they were creating those new
a liturgy that we needed, like the blessing of the houses. We never ever go into a new house or move to a new house if it had not been blessed by the pastor. They're always calling the pastor to bless the house. It's like liturgy that is coming there. The quinceañera is a liturgy that when the girls reach the 15 years old, there is coming, it's like a milestone in the life of a young woman. Because you never know if your daughter, she is going to get married. Because maybe she is just in love or never get married, whatever. But you know that she's going to be 15 years old. Mm-hmm. And there is a really big celebration. It takes years for the parents to prepare for the quinceañera. The parents are saving, and they are making a lot of remembrances for the people that come. We had one like 15 days ago. A girl, all her family worked on the fields. They are farm workers. They are earning living. Their wages are, I mean, they are poor. And my husband, he gave her and her sibling another sheet, and she was also in the catechism class for more than 6 months to get ready for quinceañera. And at the beginning, we had to ask one of the large churches there in Mount Vernon to loan us their facilities, because we know that we would have a big crowd, that would happen. But we didn't expect that coming from this poor family, all that we saw, two limousines came. And then she came with a beautiful dress, like a bride. And then there are coming 14 girls, seven girls and seven boys. Mm. The boys with the frocks and the girls with the same dresses, beautiful. And when my husband was greeting each one of the girls, he saw that all the girls and the boys had their fingers with that red stains that is coming when you are picking them. The strawberry or the berries, all of them had this, because they weren't working extra hours to be able to buy the dresses. And then all the ornaments of the church, they brought a lot of flowers and an arch that with flowers. But there is also a community celebration, because some people of the community are donating things. I'm going to bring with the flowers, I'm going to give the food, I'm going to take the limousine, that all the relatives and families and friends are putting in the pot to be able to have this quinceañera.
Is the quinceañera one young woman at a time, or is it just all the young women?
No, just one at a time. Okay. One at a time.
Wow.
Great parties. Uh-huh.
We are going to have other one the next week, and then even we have to go to Sacramento, because this quinceañera, they wanted my husband to meet it, because he was the one that to do the confirmation of that girl. They are paying everything for having that to be quinceañera. That was something that was missing our liturgy. Now the new one is coming. And the posada is another big celebration that we have at Christmas time. It's like Advent time that we are preparing them.
Now, is that hymnal available like through Augsburg? Or?
Yes, it's available through Augsburg. It's really cheap, because they are trying to promote this. It's $21 or something. And then there is the one that we are using right now in almost all the congregation.
Do they have any in the bookstore?
No, because this, I don't know. I haven't seen, no.
What's its exact meaning?
It's
Libro Canto.
Sí.
Libro Canto?
The Libro de Canto. Sí. But it's the new hymn.
It's really, we have it at our seminary. We use it. But that's interesting about the liturgy, like Blessing of Houses. We have not done that one. What's that one like in the hymn book?
Well, that is in the center. There are coming different liturgies for weddings and that. There is coming one for the blessing of the
house. And what do you do in the blessing of the
house? Oh, the blessing of the houses. Even so, the other day my husband was invited to bless a house because even that the people was not from our congregation, some they had two times somebody broke into the house and say we steal and say, why would you don't come, Pastor? There is, you go by it. First you stop at the door. Ask the Lord to take care of the this house, Lord. Take care of this house, of the people that the evil don't get in. Mm-hmm. And then with the water in the leaves, then his blessing. Then go by the kitchen, bless the food, go to the bedrooms, bless keep their sleeping in peace at the time. And then the dining room, all the family gathered here, be blessed at the time. And then at the end, you have tamales.
It's very simple in the occasional service. It's the exact same.
Right.
It's been part of, it's not practiced as probably as commonly as,
right.
But it's there in the Anglo.
Right, you know, the family is following the pastor and they are answering the prayers and because I prayed in the Bible and the reading of the Bible, and everybody is sitting on the table.
Yeah. It's the same except for the tamales.
All right. Where'd you meet the book? Okay, I think so.
Thank you.